We talk about the Rams, who yesterday released running back Todd Gurley, bringing an end to a dramatic fall in L.A. for the 2017 NFL Offensive Player of the Year. The Rams had made Gurley the highest paid running back in NFL history with a 4-year extension prior to the 2018 season. And now this morning, the news that he will join the Atlanta Falcons on a 1-year contract.
The release of running back Todd Gurley marked an astonishing reversal of fortune. How did a player who seemed so instrumental to the Rams' recent Super Bowl run end up getting cut? One answer, a trend that's been sweeping the league for years. Today, why a marquee position in the NFL has been so devalued, and what it means for the future of running backs everywhere. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Monday, March 23rd. This is ESPN Daily, presented by ADT. Josh, last time we had you on ESPN Daily, it was to talk about fullbacks. Today, we're talking about running backs.
We're making our way through the backfield, Mina.
Just like Aaron Donald. Josh Hermsmeyer writes about football for 538. Josh, late last week, the Rams announced in a shocking move that they were releasing running back Todd Gurley. This was a remarkable turn of events, given that Gurley won Offensive Player of the Year in 2017.
Gurley sprinting 40, Gurley first down, Gurley 20, 10, and touchdown!
He was discussed by some people as an MVP candidate in 2018, en route to the Super Bowl. He led the league in rushing touchdowns that year.
The 10, the 5, untouched to the end zone. Touchdown, Todd Gurley.
And on top of that, he's only 25 years old. What happened?
My goodness, 25-year-old running backs are already aging out. The first thing that happened to him was he has an arthritic knee. So at the end of the 2018 season, he had to be replaced and spelled by CJ Anderson. Eventually, he played a little bit in the Super Bowl, but he was just entirely ineffective. Unfortunately, that ineffectiveness carried over into the 2019 season. And in between, he was given an extension that made him one of the highest paid running backs in the league. And so this season, couple that knee with his expense, the cap situation in Los Angeles, and he just became a casualty. And I think he is kind of an exemplar for everything that's going on with running backs in the NFL. It's this idea of shortened careers, injury proneness, and loss of effectiveness, and therefore being cut or getting lower pay.
On the day that he was released, ESPN Stats and Info put out a number that I found fascinating. In 2015, the year that Gurley was drafted, 22 backs were drafted. Not a single one of them, Josh, is still on the team that selected them. What do you make of that?
I think it goes to this idea of running backs having really short shelf lives. Best seasons for running backs usually occur in one of their first two seasons, at least in terms of productivity, in terms of touches. You wear them down so quickly in this league, though. It's one of the toughest positions on the body. And so I think the league, as we've seen so far this year, they still are kind of have a predilection to overpay for the very good running backs or the ones that just had a good season. But by and large, I think across the league, you're seeing people being really risk averse and moving on from running backs after a couple seasons.
When did you notice that some teams, not all, and we'll get to some of the teams that have continued to pay running backs, but when did some teams first start to realize that they had been overvaluing the position and wanted to invest elsewhere?
It's hard to trace it back specifically to a particular team, but I know that people in the Twitter sphere and in analytics, the NFL analytics, have talked about the replaceability of the running back position for quite a few years. The Philadelphia Eagles were one of the first on board to kind of spend money at the position, but spread that money out over multiple players to kind of make the injury risk that's inherent in the position kind of spread across multiple sets of legs. The Baltimore Ravens are also one of the ones at the forefront of really just paying the absolute minimum that they have to at that position and actually getting pretty good production out of it.
You mentioned that the analytics community was sort of early on this trend. What did they find? What did the data tell us about running backs?
Really, two things were most important about running the football. The results of run plays are primarily determined by run blocking and defenders in the box, the defense. and not who's carrying the ball. Because of that, the finding is, or the inference is that running backs are interchangeable, and investing a lot of resources, whether it's the draft or whether it's in free agency, just doesn't make a lot of sense.
How much of this also can be pinned on the changing nature of football itself? By and large, the data tells us that passing more, passing early is more efficient, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's not even close in terms of the average value of a play, passing versus running on early downs. Then you still have to get into this idea of, you know, how much does it matter to the mentality of the team? How much does it matter to keep the defense on their toes? How much of it do you have to do to keep them honest? And so it's an open question about how much teams should be passing as like a percentage of plays, but it's probably the case they should be passing more than they are now.
So are there any situations in which running the football is more advantageous?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You need to be able to run well at the goal line on short yardage. If you have a running quarterback like Baltimore had last season, definitely scrambling and design runs for the quarterback are extremely efficient.
Jackson will keep it on the read option. Spins at the 30. Lamar Jackson, 10, 5, touchdown Ravens. Lamar Jackson with the spin, the sprint, and the score.
We saw what happened with Baltimore last year. If they hadn't run into that Tennessee buzzsaw in the playoffs, they probably would have made it to the Super Bowl, in my opinion. So there's definitely something to be said for running the ball. Analytics doesn't say stop running entirely. And if you are going to do it, you know, do it with deception, right? Off of play action, you know, get the other team guessing about what your actual formation means. And so that they lose half a step in responding to what you're doing. Those are the kind of the things analytics pushes for, not whether or not you should be 100% run or 100% passed.
You mentioned that Tennessee buzzsaw that beat the Baltimore Ravens, upset them. I think a lot of people point to that team and to Derrick Henry and say, see, having a unique generational running back does matter. Look, they upset, you know, New England and Baltimore. What would you say to that?
I mean, he got a $12.5 million franchise tag out of that performance the back end of that year. So I understand their point. They're looking at what just happened. They're looking at how he's being rewarded. And they're saying, obviously, it matters. But they beat another rushing team. The problem that I think that faced the Ravens, and we saw it with Kansas City and how they didn't share this same problem, was that if you're built around the run, whether it's by the quarterback or running it up the middle and on wide zone like the Ravens did last season, if you fall behind against a team that is also a ground and pound team and is trying to control the clock and control the pace, and you put yourself in a position where you have to come back and you're not used to doing it, or you don't have a quarterback that perhaps is known for that type of play, you get what happened in Baltimore that night.
Jackson under pressure. Hit. Fumbles, ball is loose, Titan ball!
Stepping in for the interception, Kenny Vaccaro! And the Titans come up with another turnover! The Tennessee Titans are shocking the Ravens.
Whereas with the Kansas City Chiefs, they fell behind early three straight times, but ended up winning the Super Bowl because they have a pass-first attack. It's higher variance. You can make up ground easier with the passing game than you can with the run. When everything's working great, rushing is the first thing you should try. And if you're good at it, you should do it as long as you can. But when it fails pretty spectacularly, and you need to be able to pass. And in fact, at the NFL level, parity is so prevalent that you really should just start out passing at that point, because everyone's trying to run and everyone's trying to stop the run.
So the Chiefs are sort of the analytics darling in this scenario because, you know, they pass their way to the Super Bowl. Josh, they also have Patrick Mahomes, right? So if you're a team with an average quarterback, do you still think it's better to take a pass first approach?
In every NFL game, even with a mediocre quarterback, we find that they are better and teams are better and more efficient passing the ball. And sometimes it's even more apparent when you have a kind of an average or a slightly above average quarterback, because the defense and the defensive coordinator is almost sure you're going to not rely on him, right? They're going to say, well, he's kind of crap. You know, they're probably going to run at us all day long and try and be safe with the ball. So to the extent that you can put a mediocre quarterback in good positions, like perhaps Tennessee did last year, then you can take a quarterback that had been floundering for years, like Ryan Tannehill, and turn him into one of the better quarterbacks in the league.
The Chiefs never won running back by the end of the season, a guy that some people thought could have been the Super Bowl MVP was undrafted Damian Williams, who is set to make just over $2 million next year. How much does finance or the market factor into, you know, what we think about running backs today?
I think, you know, if you're a casual fan and you see everyone else basically on the team, except for the punter and the kicker, getting more than on average than these running backs, I think it's beginning to percolate that they're probably not the most important piece on the offense anymore. One of the great things about analytics is that, unlike baseball, where like things got more boring when analytics became involved, like when analytics get involved in football, I think things become more exciting. We want more passing. We want to go for it on fourth down. We want to know more punt. So I think that one of the good things about all of this is that you see more aggressive, more exciting football when it's played in the way that evidence seems to suggest it should.
So, Josh, it sounds like there's sort of a confluence of factors that have led to the devaluation of the position, right? Teams being aware of analytics, changing rules, football itself changing, contracts changing. But largely it can be summed up as the advantage you get on the field from paying a more talented running back versus an average one is just much smaller than the advantage you get from paying out for other positions.
I think that's right. Perhaps not at kicker or punter. But in almost every other case, you're going to find that there's just a bigger difference between the best player at a position and an average player at the position than at running back.
All right, after the break, let's talk about whether teams are really changing their stripes when it comes to paying running backs. We're presented by Marathon. Now, more than ever, we have to look out for each other and count on each other. And Marathon wants you to know that you can count on them for high-quality, top-tier gas. While we are aware travel might not be top of mind, there might be times where you have to hop in the car to run an errand. Maybe you have to drop off groceries and supplies to your family. Maybe you've become an amazing baker and want to drop off a few dozen cookies on your best friend's porch. Or maybe you just want to drive around to all of your friends' homes simply to wave from a safe distance. But before you head out, remember to fuel up at Marathon. Marathon gasolines are formulated with STP additives. They keep your vehicle running at peak performance by optimizing fuel economy, removing those ugly deposit buildups, and reducing emissions. Remember, wherever you need to go, the people at Marathon are behind you all the way. Marathon, fueling the American spirit. On Friday afternoon, Adam Schefter reported that former Chargers running back Melvin Gordon signed a 2-year deal that could be worth $16 million with the Denver Broncos. Josh, Gordon, of course, held out last season because he wanted a massive deal from Los Angeles, and he didn't get it. And his lower-cost replacement, Austin Ekeler, came in and produced at a high level. What does this new deal tell you about how NFL teams view the position right now?
You know, it's interesting. I don't know how NFL views this deal writ large, but I think I understand what the Broncos are doing. They have Royce Freeman, they have Philip Lindsay, and now they have Melvin Gordon. So it seems to me like they're taking the approach, except doing one part of it wrong, that the Eagles took, which is have a big stable of backs because injury and ineffectiveness are lurking any game for a running back in the NFL. And so I think that's what's going on in Denver. But if you look at the rest of the league and the salaries that are being paid to running backs and the glut of running backs on the market, there's just so many. Devonta Freeman still doesn't have a home. Deion Lewis, Chris Thompson, Carlos Hyde, and Lamar Miller are still out. So I think overall, the NFL is still moving in the direction we discussed, which is a little lower pay for running backs. $5 million a year for a journeyman who still has some wear on the tire seems to be the going price.
It was just last year that Dallas went out and gave Ezekiel Elliott a 6-year, $90 million, again, that's in quotations, people, extension. What were they thinking?
It's a good question. I actually wrote an article about what they possibly could be thinking, and I explored it from a couple different angles. And one of them was perhaps they thought that Zeke was just better at the things that running backs need to be good at, like short yardage or closing out a ball game, right? So that's a hugely important thing. If you have a running back that's better than average at making those tough runs at the end of game that keeps the clock running and gets you the win, I think you could make a case they might be worth that kind of money. Unfortunately, he's not. He's just exactly average, just like any other running back at doing the things like running out the clock or the goal line or in short yardage. He's just exactly average. And so it didn't make a lot of sense in the contract. Now, he did do well on early downs, but I don't know that it rationalizes that large of a salary.
Well, let's go back to the Rams and try to unpack why they originally gave Gurley so much money. Obviously, Josh, he was a big star coming off of the 2017 season, but he also had years left on his rookie deal. Why do you think LA gave him that extension?
I think a lot of it was based on his touchdown total, and touchdown total is about the offense writ large. It's about the scheme. It's about the line. It's about the play action that Goff was able to execute off of all of that. And so to kind of give him all the credit for those touchdowns and then say, therefore, he's an MVP candidate, it seemed to me at the time to be a little bit much. One of the other things that's interesting about running backs is if you give them lots of carries, they'll have lots of yards. And I think that this is this kind of bias that we have as football analysts is a problem. And it leads us down false paths when we're trying to make determinations about who's good and who's bad.
I think one reason why this argument or this trend doesn't really square with people, it's not only, Josh, that they're watching television and seeing what incredible athletes these running backs are and the amazing plays they're making and how good they are in fantasy football, but they're also seeing how much punishment they take, right? Mm-hmm. And it's hard to square their usage with this idea that they should be paid less than some random swing tackle.
Yeah, it's a great point. And my favorite player of all time is Gale Sayers. I just loved watching him play. I love the way he could move and his speed, and it was electric.
And here he is, galloping Gale, carrying the mail. This is his sixth touchdown of the game.
And then coming up watching the 49ers, Roger Craig pumping his knees so high and breaking tackles and then catching passes.
Montana on the roll.
We see these players, especially if you've been watching football for many years and not just in the last decade or so, and you've seen the importance of running historically. And if you played in the college or in high school, you knew the importance of running. It's just so dissonant to then say, oh, well, running doesn't matter. The running back doesn't matter in the NFL. So I understand that completely. And certainly I think there's, as we discussed, plenty of room for interesting, cool new ways to run the ball. For instance, it looks like with Tom Brady out of the picture, Bill Belichick might be going to something crazy. He franchise tagged a guard, Joe Thuney, and he just signed a fullback, Dan Vitale. Like, what is he going to do? Is he going to run like the wishbone, like a triple wing? Like, what is he going to do? Is
yes.
he
going
to do exotic craziness? It could be really cool what's coming out of New England next season.
Bill Belichick, bring back the wing tee. We're ready. But along those lines, do you think there's any chance this trend reverses? Last time you and I spoke, it was about fullbacks coming back into vogue. Now, it wasn't about fullbacks being worth, $10 million or anything. It was more that they were being used at all. But could football evolve in a way that creates more opportunity for individual running backs?
It could if they were a key part of the passing game. And I think that, we moved in that direction in some ways, and in some ways we haven't. In some ways, we're still drafting, or teams are still drafting for archetypes that are pounders and, two down backs. The type of back the NFL needs to be selecting for now more than ever is this player who can make people miss in space, catch the ball, run the route tree of the slot wide receiver. And I think that, we're going to see more of those type of athletes come up from these spread offenses in college more and more and more. And I don't think it'll be difficult to find them. It'll just be difficult to change the mindset of the NFL to use them in that way.
So right now, if you were a high school football star and you had hopes of going to the NFL, probably wouldn't play running back.
If I was trying to go to the NFL, no. I think I would try and switch to maybe cornerback. But if my goal was just to get a scholarship and play in college, you could still do far worse than being a stud running back. So it really just depends on what's your level of athleticism.
See, Josh, I'd want to be a backup quarterback. Chase Daniel is up to $30 million in earnings.
Incredible. But, my dad told me, he said, Josh, the best job you could ever have is punter. And and I kind of agree with him. That would be probably the best NFL job.
Thanks so much, Josh.
Thanks.
Coming up, as baseball players keep their distance, minor leaguers band together. Hi, guys. Given everything that is happening in the world right now, most of us are buying things online. I saw that AT&T started doing two really helpful things for those who want to buy a new phone or device online. They are offering fast, free, non-contact delivery and curbside pickup so that online shopping is as simple and safe as possible. On top of that, they have a flexible return policy so you can shop at ease. You can visit att.com to learn how to shop online from the safety of your home 24/7. Subject to change, restrictions apply. Here's another story I want you to know. While the uncertainty created by the pandemic is affecting professional athletes at all levels, some will feel the sting more than others, including one of the most vulnerable groups in sports, minor league baseball players. Last week, ESPN's Anthony Oliveri wrote about how minor leaguers across the country are looking for part-time jobs to get by, like working for delivery companies and taking on other temporary gigs. MLB announced that they'll pay them a lump sum to cover these players through April 8th, the end of spring training, and they've said they're working on a plan to help them get through the postponed part of the regular season. But in the meantime, hundreds of athletes are trying to figure out when and where they'll make a living. Which, by the way, is nothing new. Many minor leaguers get paid nothing during spring training anyways, and some of them get poverty-level wages all year. They make between $4,800 and $14,000 per season, depending on the level at which they play. They also don't have their own union. In February, the Associated Press reported that Major League Baseball is planning to raise salaries for minor leaguers in 2021. But the move only came after years of MLB lobbying Congress to exempt minor leaguers from protection under minimum wage laws, which, by the way, they won in 2018. While the upcoming change will certainly help, Garrett Brosius, a lawyer and former player who's leading a class action lawsuit on behalf of minor leaguers, has argued that even with the raise, many of them will still be paid below the poverty line. And on Friday, he and others announced the formation of a new group, Advocates for Minor Leaguers, and asked MLB to immediately double their wages. In the meantime, like everyone else, all they can do is wait. I'm Ina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.